Welcome to East Meets West, episode 240. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And a lot of people may have thought there was no East Meets West again this week, because we didn't have one last week because I was still hoarse, and I was getting ready to fill in for Leo Laporte on the Twit Network for 3 weeks, and I finally decided, you know what, I need to rest my voice. And then this week, the Super Bowl was going on, and so we did This Week in Tech early on Twit, and decided that we would just go audio only for East Meets West.
Yes, there was. I mean, you know, there was a lot of there's a lot of activity happening, and so we.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I watched bits of it. I had to go out to dinner with my folks for the last two quarters, so I saw I saw bits of the halftime.
Now, when you told me you were going to be with your family, I kind of assumed, without really thinking too hard about it, that you were watching the Super Bowl with them, but you weren't. It was totally unrelated, huh?
Yes. They were just coming up because of the Super Bowl, which means the restaurant closes since no one ever shows up.
Because no one shows up. I see. So it was Super Bowl related, but not because they wanted to see it.
Exactly.
I missed the first quarter and a little bit of the second quarter because I finished up filling in for Leo on This Week in Tech. And then wrapped up some stuff and drove back home. By the time I got home, the Packers were handily winning, and it looked like it was going to be pretty boring, but then the Steelers started to come back. Then we watched the halftime show. Did you see the halftime show?
I saw it, and I know there was a lot of complaints, or rather criticisms of it. It just seemed like every other halftime show.
I thought the singing was awful. And
okay,
a lot of people thought, you don't like the Black Eyed Peas. I actually do like the Black Eyed Peas, and I've seen them perform before, and I thought they were good, but they were just shouting. It was not on key. It was very amateur.
It was, and I also noticed that there were some technical difficulties with the audio. So when they brought up the Black Eyed Peas first, each of the members, you know, had their initial chorus or initial set of lyrics that they sung. And when it came to Fergie, there was literally almost a 2 second beat where you heard her yelling being picked up by the other mics, but not by hers, because someone didn't bring her didn't fade up her mic. So it's like, someone didn't turn on her mic, and right when you thought that, someone brought it up.
That was pretty amateurish. The lighting was awful. There were times when they were in the dark. You couldn't really see them. They weren't fully lit. Some of the lighting that was supposed to be on the ground didn't come up. I think it was like part of the V. They had love spelled out. Didn't turn on. There were these people in these glowing suits, which is like, yeah, you can pick on that. But that's normal Super Bowl pageantry, you know, opening
that
ceremony kind of stuff.
That didn't bother me. What bothered me is you
they didn't. Some of them weren't on.
Exactly. Well, like half their suits were on. Right, like the upper torso, but then you could see like where everyone else had like a left leg lit up. That leg on that one person wasn't on, and I'm wondering if it has to do something with the fact that there was that recent storm front that moved in and literally blocked everyone's, you know, movement, so they couldn't like maybe get enough rehearsal time.
I don't know, because it was just.
It felt really rough.
It was not. I think the Black Eyed Peas probably are taking the brunt of the criticism because, like I said, the singing wasn't good, especially for them. But the entire show was just shot. It felt shoddy. It didn't look good. It didn't sound good.
The show or just the game?
The halftime show. The game was fine. I didn't see any problems in the game. Just talking about the halftime show. But, man, was that was an embarrassment. I don't know if it's Fox that actually produces that. Or if it's like an NFL produced.
Well, they used to farm it out. I mean, back in the early 2000s, that was being produced. I guess like late 90s, they were being produced by MTV.
Uh huh.
So I don't know if it's the same thing where it's contracted out to.
Well, I think that reign ended with Janet Jackson, right?
Potentially, yeah.
Because MTV produced the Janet Jackson famous wardrobe malfunction. And I think after that, it got handed off to somebody else, but I don't know who. Because it was after that that we started getting like Paul McCartney and the Rolling Stones and
the
Who. Like really old school safe bands. And this was the first year that they went out on a limb And then there were these weird cameos, which weren't necessarily bad on their own, but they just didn't really fit. Yeah, Slash from Guns N' Roses came out and started playing Sweet Child of Mine, and then Fergie sang it. And
then she was rubbing up against him, which is kind of creepy.
And then Usher showed. Yes. It was odd. It was really, really, really odd. But, you know, I mean, I guess halftime shows are often known for criticism. Prince, I think, was the one that everyone seemed to like.
It was, and even though it was pretty suggestive with his guitar and mm-hmm. the way it was shaped and his gestures, you could really see what I'm talking about if you ever go back to the old footage for that halftime show, and there's a couple of shots of Prince from the back, so it's silhouetted against the light, and you can kind of see basically it looked like he was holding a huge, you know, a dildo or whatever in his hand, and he was thrusting it because his guitar was shaped in a specific way.
And of course, what everybody is going to talk about tomorrow is the commercials.
Yes, I saw like four or five before, because you know there were maybe they weren't leaked, but you know people were saying this is going to be in the Super Bowl.
Some people put out their commercials ahead of time for some odd reason. So yeah,
I know why, because you want people to get excited about it.
Yeah, but then you've already seen it. I guess they're figuring people are going to watch. The people are not going to watch the Super Bowl because they saw our commercial. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. You watch a really cool, like I did this. I saw the Passat one with the little kid doing the Darth Vader bit. And then I tweeted that out because I thought it was really cute and funny.
Yeah, and so you're adding to their
marketing. I'm part of their marketing.
Exactly, exactly. The and Fox is doing something smart. Up on Fox.com, you can see all of the ads from the Super Bowl.
Brilliant.
I think the one that's probably going to take the most heat are the Groupon ads. Did you see those?
No, I did not. I think I missed out on that particular set.
The one that I saw, two of them. The first one I saw was an ad that started off like it was a PSA about Tibet, and they were talking about the oppression of the Tibetan people and the danger that they live in, and then it turned into, but I can get some great Tibetan food and not even have to pay full price with Groupon. And I just saved $30.
Ah, it seemed kind of crass and tasteless.
Yeah, a lot of people came out against that and said, wait a minute, you're using the Tibetan situation as a joke?
Facts. Fox passed up on a ad that was religious in nature. Was it a Bible passage, I think? And, you know, it basically showed a living room, you know, of a bunch of guys watching the football game, and you keep seeing this number come up. And I guess Fox determined it wasn't appropriate for the Super Bowl, so they, like, said no.
That's odd. Buy the spot. Yeah, there's always one or two ads every year that go over the line in some way. And the broadcaster, whoever it is, CBS, Fox, ABC, whoever, decides that they're not going to allow it to air. And that GoDaddy was one of the more famous ones of that, where they play on this every year now. It's getting kind of tired, actually, where they had an ad that was turned down as being too risque. And so they decided, well, what we'll do is we'll have an ad in the Super Bowl that says, see our ad that was too risque to be on the Super Bowl. And of course, everybody flocked to the web to watch that advertisement, and it worked great. Well, now every year they have an ad that pretends like, oh, this was the ad that was too risque. See the rest of it on our website. And it's never nearly as risque as they're trying to make it out to be. And it's an old shtick. It's like, yeah, you do this every year. Kind of tired of it.
Yeah, it gets old. I mean, this really kind of goes to show you that you cannot reuse. You can't be lazy about advertising. You can't, you know, unless it's a commodity like tomatoes or something like that. You just can't expect people to sit through and be excited about your really boring commercial when you get so many creative, entertaining, you know, spots that are littered through. And, you know, if you think about all the number of spots, what are the ones that people are going to remember? I doubt it's going to be the GoDaddy one.
No, but they are going to talk about the Groupon one.
Yes.
And that, and maybe that's what Groupon wants. They don't care if it's a little bit negative. It gets people talking about them again.
Like, you know, that Groupon ad was tasteless, but you know what? I do need to save some money.
But they do have such good deals. Okay, the other one I saw was about the rainforest. And again, it started off very serious. The destruction of the rainforest is a tragedy.
I think I saw that one.
And then, you know, but not what was it? Not all forest destruction is bad. I just saved $20 on a bikini, a Brazilian bikini wax.
Yes, that was the one with, she used to be hooked up with the guy from Four Weddings and a Funeral. That British guy got caught with the prostitute, Divine Brown. Heath Ledger, damn it.
Kenneth Branagh?
Hugh
Grant.
Yeah, Hugh Grant. And what's her name?
I don't know, but so, I know who you're talking about.
She was basically talking about, you know, the swaths of forest being, you know, removed and stuff. And then she's talking, you know, there's another way to remove your
forest. But not all forest destruction is bad. That's the line that stuck out as, ooh, that was probably not a good idea.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It was pretty, I thought it kind of did a double take on that, where you kind of like, they didn't just really do that, did they?
They did.
They did?
Yeah. It was pretty good. Pretty good. I saw some negative things on Twitter about the HomeAway.com ad where the baby gets thrown against the window and it says test baby.
Elizabeth Hurley, that's her name.
Oh, right, Elizabeth Hurley. Now,
no, I did not see the baby tossed against the screen. That sounds kind of painful.
But it was a doll. It wasn't an actual baby.
I don't know. Seems kind of splitting hairs.
But I guess that's the idea, right? Or splitting babies. You want to stand out.
Yes, and I don't, you know, and that's the thing with any kind of mass media where you're talking about television, newspapers, you know, that's how you get tabloids now. It's like you get these super sensationalistic headlines that overplay, hype up, or in some way make things more dramatic than they actually are because you do want to grab those eyeballs. You're right, you see those ads for any virus, like you go to a website and you get a little pop-up and says, you know, viruses and worms detected on your PC. Click here to, you know, get rid of them. You know, and it's one of those things where when you get so much of it, people get desensitized and you kind of have to keep upping up the level. You know, people complain about that with violence in the movies, right? You know, before getting shot was considered violence, but that's tame now. If you get decapitated and blood spurting out and, you know, all sorts of horrific things happening, you know, that's getting pretty tame. And then you go to things like Saw and, I don't know, it's just gruesome.
Another one that had a lot of people talking, mostly positive, was a Chrysler ad that was 60 seconds. That's insanely expensive. That's like $6 million.
Wow.
And it was the first half was all about Detroit. And how the spirit of Detroit, and, you know, Detroit is not New York, and it's tough. And what do they know about luxury cars? Well, let me tell you, when you come from where we've come from, luxury means all the more. And we know it. And I'm probably not doing it. It's justice here because it sounds a little trite. The way they did it, it came across very sincere. And they were showing pictures of downtown Detroit and statues and you know, these people, very strong people like traffic cops and workers and you know, it came across very well. And then at the very end, Marshall Mathers, Eminem, comes out.
Oh, yeah.
And said, you know, and said, I can't remember the line, but he says something, you know, about Detroit and this is who we are. And it's an ad for a Chrysler luxury car, the Chrysler 200. So I thought that worked pretty well, although, man, was it insanely long for a Super Bowl ad.
That's actually kind of cool. I'll have to check that out. But you know, it's a standard event day, big game, big ads, lots of food eaten. Although I just ate like an apple for most of it.
We actually had some chips and guac.
I had some.
Sort of a Super Bowl-y kind of thing to do.
Oh, you can't just have guac. You need, like, you know, your special Super Bowl dip.
Yeah, we didn't have a special Super Bowl dip.
Five kinds of cheeses and, you know, a heart attack from, like, the amount of cholesterol and fat mixed in with chili.
After the game was over, though, Eileen was like, should we have a beer? I'm like, you want a beer? She's like, well, I feel like it's the Super Bowl. We should drink a beer. I'm like, okay. Oh, let's have a beer.
Maybe she saw something that kind of really, you know, touched her.
One of the beer commercials. Well, that's another interesting thing on FoxSports.com, where they have all of the advertisements up for you to watch. They have a rating up. I guess when you watch the ad, you can rate it, and you can sort these by best rating, worst rating. It's the funny ones that are getting the best rating. That may not mean that they're the most effective, but those are the ones folks are enjoying the most.
Well, those are the ones you pass off to your friends. You know, you don't hear an inspiring video. Like, I don't see an inspiring video and suddenly send that to everyone. But if you see something really funny, I don't know. I'll send it off to a bunch of people. It's like, oh, this is great. You should watch this. It's hilarious.
The Bridgestone ad where a driver helps out a beaver and then the beaver helps him back is the top rated ad at 97% rating. I didn't think that one was that. I mean, it was all right, but
you know, different people have a different idea of what's funny or good or whatever.
Something appealed to them. Also, the Transformers 3 trailer is the number four highest rated.
That was kind of lame. The one with the guy doing a fake car, used car, or like local car, car lot ad.
Shia LaBeouf was in it.
Yeah, you would think they would have spent more money. It looked really low rent.
I actually liked the NFL ad, which I assume the NFL just gets a free ad because it's their event, right? And there was a there was an ad for the NFL Network that was all clips from 70s and 80s television shows, mostly sitcoms, of people making references to the Super Bowl or getting ready to watch a football game. And it was nicely done because you see all these people in their gear. They really had a lot of Happy Days clips because Happy Days took place in Wisconsin, and so they were Packers fans, and Packers are playing in the Super Bowls.
Yes. I don't know. After a while, I don't know. Things like that, the self-referential things, I don't know, sometimes seem a little bit too self-important.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, it's one thing if it wasn't part of the event, but because it's part of it, it just seems like, yeah, you know, we're the cornerstone of American society. It's like, eh.
You know, but what was nice about it is there was no VO. They weren't pushing it. It was just a montage. So it was kind of like one of those things you see in award shows where they just have like a montage of clips from film history.
Those.
Oh, well, you might have hated this commercial then.
I can't stand that they're so self-serving. I'm sorry. It comes off that way to me.
See, I didn't think this was self-serving at all. I didn't even know what it was for at first. Obviously, I knew it had to do with football, but
I'll watch it and then make that judgment at that point, but just hearing about things, it just seems, I don't know. It's like going to like a Paramount lot and they show you a movie about how Paramount changed the world. It's like, all these great movies.
I definitely know what you mean, but I didn't feel that from this.
Maybe you were too drunk on Super Bowl madness.
I wasn't really, though, I have to say.
Maybe you were drunk on Sunday.
Even drunk. It wasn't until after the game that Eileen decided we should have a beer.
Well, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's that time of the month for you.
What does that mean?
Nothing, but I think it's funny.
I'm not sure. Well, like you said, everybody's got their own idea of funny.
Yes, funny. Did you watch Glee that came after?
I did, actually.
I thought it was pretty well done.
I thought it was kind of cheap.
Did you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was like, I thought some of the turns of fate were a little too easy.
Too convenient?
Yeah, it was very predictable. They won the game. What a surprise.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, no offense, but I think that whole episode was written for the Super Bowl.
And really, all they had to do was go talk to the guys in the end, and they all changed their mind.
Yeah, but you need the journey, man. The journey is what the show was about. That's for that one guy. And then everything actually kind of goes back to where it started.
And their singing is very good, don't get me wrong. But a lot of the times, it's very obvious that they just wanted to put a song in, and there's no real motivation. For instance, at the point where they go to the all boys school, and they're all singing Bills, 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 and it's really just a setup for two of those guys from the all boys school to go meet two of the people from McKinley High School and talk about the problems at McKinley High School. It's like, why did I need to see that song? It has no bearing or relation.
Some people enjoy the song and dance, Tom. Some people enjoy the song and dance.
Like I said, I know that the singing's good, but what I like about Glee, when I like Glee, and I don't watch it every week. I'm not a huge fan. I'm not a hater, but I'm not a huge fan.
You're not a Gleek.
No, I'm not. But what I like about it is when the songs fit the storyline and are extremely funny or extremely well done. I really like the Gwyneth Paltrow episode where she sang CeeLo's Forget You. Obviously, they didn't sing the other version on broadcast TV, but it tied into the plot. She was like, you know, they were accusing her of being old and how they always sing old songs. They were kind of poking fun at their own motifs. And yes. She says, well, how about we sing some CeeLo? And then they sing. It's like, oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. It all fit in.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm very partial to that show, so.
No, I know. I know you are a Gleek.
I am.
So what? Which it surprises me, Roger, because you don't strike me as somebody who just likes the song and dance. I know you're saying that just now.
Yeah,
but.
I enjoy it because it's a majority of the productions don't feel cheesy to me. Like they actually feel like they were written for adults and not for kids, which is what a lot of musicals, unless they were based on a Broadway musicals, kind of seem like. You know, because when people think of musicals on TV, they think of like High School Musical. They think of a Disney TV. They think of something that appeals to, you know, tweens and early teens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Glee sets a different tone because it sets out for an adult audience. And while it is enjoyed by younger people, it's still aimed at, you know, the middle 20 to, you know, 30 category. And so the look and feel seems a lot more adult, more mature, and not as campy or as day glow as say like a Disney High School Musical.
See, I get that feeling sometimes from it. Not all the time, but sometimes.
You're just a hater. It's okay.
I said I'm not a hater.
Of course you're going to deny it.
I'm not saying that the show is awful or it sucks. Some people are Glee haters. As soon as you mention Glee, I'm sure there were people in our audience rolling their eyes, reaching for the stop button. I don't want to hear anything about that show. That's a hater.
I know, but you know, what can you do? I mean, look, there's so many things happening in the world today that I think it's that one bit of salve that takes an hour out of a busy week and lets me rest.
Do you hear about the Kenneth Cole things? Jumping from lots of things going on in the world, Kenneth Cole put on Twitter that, you know, there are protests in Egypt. They must have heard about our great sale.
Oh, my God. That is so... I haven't heard about that. That is incredibly tacky. Oh, my God. That is disgusting. I'm sorry. That is just...
That's what the Groupon... ads were making some people compare it to, but I, they're not even close because the Groupon things were like, well, Tibet, long-standing, you know, problem, which China says isn't a problem. Rainforest, we all know the rainforest, but you know, people are dying in Egypt, and I you can make an argument people are dying in Tibet too, and that's almost as bad. But I mean, Egypt is really serious right now, and a very intensely bad situation. Here's what he wrote, Kenneth Cole. Millions are in uproar in hashtag Cairo. Rumor is they heard our new spring collection is now available online.
That totally makes me not want to buy anything from Kenneth Cole ever.
I mean, really?
It's not even that people have died, but it is. It seems like such a monumental and such an incredibly important event to make light of.
What?
It just seems tasteless. Yeah.
It is tasteless and it's tone deaf. I get the mechanics of that joke, right?
Oh no, I totally understand what they thought they were doing, but you think it's just tacky. It's so gauche. It's just like, really? I like, has everyone who thought about this just been locked in their own bathrooms or homes?
If it was, you know, people taking to the streets in Green Bay, you know, referencing the Super Bowl, and you're talking about an uproar that's of a mild type and is not, you know, involved in serious things like totalitarian oppression and police brutality, that could work. You know, millions are in uproar in Green Bay. Rumors they heard of it. That might be funny. I don't think it's great, but at least it's mildly funny. Taking the situation, you know, where people are trying to change the course of their country and change the course of their lives and standing up for what they believe in and risking death, that doesn't relate to your new spring collection in any way at all.
It's just, I don't know. It's like going to, like, you know, a refugee camp. It's like they're all waiting in line for it's like, whatever. That's just incredibly tasteless. Speaking of Egypt, do you think this will have a positive ending or a mixed ending or a negative ending?
I really don't have a good sense right now. It looks to me like Mubarak has to step down. It does not look like they are going to allow him to continue in power, and they are not going anywhere. I thought it looked like it might fall apart when the so-called pro-Mubarak protesters showed up. And there's a lot of rumors that those are paid thugs, you know, being staged. Took a while to show up, and that lends credence to the idea that these are faked. These are paid protesters, or at least paid leaders to get a few people to go on their side. But when that didn't end the protest, that to me is it. And for anybody who doesn't know, President Mubarak has agreed not to run for re-election, although he intends to run his son for re-election, so I'm not sure how big of a deal that is. And he has resigned as the leader of his party, but he has yet to relinquish power now, which would be outside of the laws of the country. I mean, he would essentially have to do what Richard Nixon did in the United States and resign, and then there would have to be an interim government.
It's that whole it's so weird because Mubarak himself came to power in a military coup, and it's you know, the whole situation with Egypt kind of strikes me as a textbook case of how diplomacy can be an incredibly infuriating thing. You know, George Bush, during his 8 years in office, was very adamant with pushing democracy into the Middle East. And, you know, a lot of people criticized him at the time, especially in light of the Iraq invasion, that he was just being naive and incredibly out of touch with how things worked, and that, you know, real politics would come back into the fore after his administration. And, you know, Obama has done some of that. And now people are saying the reverse, is that, you know, we've cynically, you know, kept dictators in power in order to ensure stability, yada, yada, yada. It's better to have the devil you know than the devil you don't know. And I don't know. I mean, you know, on one hand, it's, you know, everyone's expecting a new kind of Arab Renaissance, or at least a democratic Renaissance, through all these protests. But on the other hand, people are very aware of what happened with the Iranian Revolution when the Ayatollah Khomeini was brought into power, because that was initiated by students, by the educated elite as well, but got co-opted by religious theologians at the end to kind of install their power based their system of government.
Yeah, but the difference is, with Tunisia and Egypt, and I'm not sure about Yemen, but those are the three main protests, although Jordan is having some protests as well. King Abdullah in Jordan has dissolved the government and called for re-election, and they're still calling for him to resign. So there is a wave going on here. The difference is, in Iran, in the Russian Revolution in 1917, there was a dedicated organization that was popular that co-opted the feelings of the populace. So you had a Trotsky, you had a Vladimir Lenin, you had a Khomeini. there is the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, but they're not very popular. From what I've read, they have less than, you know, 20% of the populace on their side. So it's not outside the realm that they could co-opt the revolution, but everything that I'm reading doesn't seem likely. It seems likely that the moderates, like al-Baradei, would be the folks to lead the next stage.
You know, the problem with that is that the Muslim Brotherhood is probably the most organized political group currently. I mean, al-Baradei came in within the past couple of weeks, and it's one thing to be the focal point of outrage and stuff. It's another thing to kind of install or kind of.
But these protests are very organized, and they're not organized by the Muslim Brotherhood.
I'm not saying that they are. What I am saying is that it's one thing to protest; it's another thing to start building or reforming or developing a new government.
There's plenty of examples of revolutions that started exactly like this and built a successful new government. Though they're not all Iran and Russia.
That's true. But I mean, even the French Revolution went through a very bloody period before the keel got straightened again.
Right, but there was a bloodless revolution in England. There was the United States Revolution. There were revolutions in Mexico. It doesn't have to go that way just because it starts as a popular protest.
Yeah, but I also think that, I don't know, I have not seen it. What I've seen in the press is what people identify as the best outcome in terms of having who, what, where. Like, you know, ideally it would be al-Baradei, but I don't think that is real. I mean, if you look at it, the educated elite form a very small percentage of Egypt's population. And if a group can co-opt a majority of the voters...
that's what I'm saying is, in Iran, the Khomeini's group was very popular and so did co-opt a majority of the voters. In Egypt, Muslim Brotherhood is not very popular. Now, I may be wrong. The things I'm reading may be incorrect, but based on what I'm reading where they're saying Muslim Brotherhood is not well-liked in Egypt, it doesn't seem likely that they would be able to get the populace. You know, you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, no, I understand. And which I'm probably putting in a very inarticulate manner is the Muslim Brotherhood and or another group, which the thing is, everything is in a state of flux until it's done, and I don't see any signs of having a successful, stable government.
If they had a successful, stable government, there wouldn't be a revolution. They wouldn't be out in the streets protesting. Well, there would have been an orderly transfer of power.
Well, but what I'm saying is, I don't see any form or design or plan or any. And I understand what you're saying. I mean, that's why they're protesting. What I am going to suggest is that it'll probably get worse in the short term before it gets better. A lot worse.
We'll certainly get more unstable. I don't know. I don't necessarily know whether I agree with you that it will get worse.
Because, you know, the ultimate arbiter of peace in that country is the military, is the Egyptian military. And in the same way that the Turkish military has been, quote unquote, the guardian of the secular constitution of Turkey, they've taken power in various stages in Turkey's recent history, and then turned it back over to a civilian government.
The army is very friendly to the protest movement. They're not on its side, but they could be making it bloody in Egypt,
And I think
they're being very respectful of it.
The military is very, very well aware of their role in Egyptian society and how they're seen. Whether they will turn that into yet another kind of military-supported, government change, much like the one that put Mubarak in power and killed Sadat, remains to be seen. I mean, let me put it this way. I am not so sure that all this will end well in the short term or even in the midterm. Probably in the long term, if you're looking at a 50-year span, it's probably will end up relatively well. Not like, everyone's going to be singing and dancing. The problem in my view is that the protests initiated with economic hardship. People were upset that there weren't enough jobs. Price of food went up. Price of fuel kind of got people frustrated, and they directed their anger and focused it on the corrupt government that they have.
Huh. Sounds a lot like Eastern Europe.
Yes, but the Eastern Europe never had a situation where, you know, what, 50% of their population is 30 and under? So you have to provide a system or at least some sort of mechanism that you can help alleviate most of those issues, but I don't see how they can practically do so. How can you bear the economy within five to 10 years to make a difference without having
a lot of people thought the same thing about Poland too.
Yeah, again, and Poland did not have a huge population of people that were 30 under. That
so you don't trust the young kids.
I think without having the mediating influence of people who are older, I honestly believe
I definitely disagree with you on that, but I respect your opinion.
That's fine. I just
you're becoming an old man.
No, I just have, I don't think so. I think it's a lot to ask for you know, a generation that was born under Mubarak's reign, who've only known the Mubarak way of dealing with things, and you know, they know what they don't want, and they think they know what they want. They want some sort of democratic, but democratic power doesn't necessarily equal economic opportunity. Doesn't necessarily. I mean, even in Eastern Europe, there was some pretty some touch and go situations where people were worried that because of the economic situation, that they could have yet another wave of popular uprising.
And that's really my, in all seriousness, Roger, that's my only point is you can't say because it's unstable, it's going to turn out badly. Because it's unstable, it can go either way. And that was true in Eastern Europe and it went well. And it was true in Iran and it went poorly. So, you know, in the end, it's impossible to know how it's going to turn out right now.
I'm leaning toward more negative.
Well, I'm leaning toward more positive, but that's usually where we end up on this show.
Fine. We'll meet back in a year and figure out how well we did.
But one last thing before we wrap up, backing up a little bit to something you said earlier made me think of this. President Bush said in justification for going in Iraq after we found out there were no weapons of mass destruction and that we had actually gone in on a lie. I'm not pointing a finger at who lied, but somebody lied, even if it was an innocent lie. The reason we went in ended up not being there. President Bush tried to justify it in reverse, saying, but aren't you glad Saddam Hussein is gone and we're going to have a democracy in Iraq and this is going to set up a wave of democracy across the Middle East? And everyone laughed. Right now, what he said would happen is absolutely happening. I don't believe this has anything to do with Iraq. But it is quite an odd coincidence that now you have Tunisia, now you have Egypt, now you have Yemen, you have Jordan, you have smaller protests in a lot of the other countries in the Middle East.
I'm curious to see how well like Saudi Arabia or some of the oil rich nations in the Middle East will deal with it, because for a long period of time they've managed to buy off the population in so much that they gave them, you know, you get a check from the government.
And to your point about youth, these power structures in all of these countries are aging.
Oh yeah, they're a gentocracy. They were designed around a specific group of people who are rapidly getting older and older. I mean, even the prince of Saudi Arabia is what, in his like early 70s?
Yeah.
And you know, it's the same thing there. I mean, you know, even in Saudi Arabia, a lot of young people cannot find meaningful work, like work that they went to college for, or something that will put them in a better position as they reach mature, you know, as they reach adulthood and want to start families. Can't really start a family if you don't have a job that can pay the bills. And as people see their situation get worse, while certain individuals within government or within the power structure are making off even better, I think that is a ripe recipe for a popular uprising. Not necessarily a revolution, but enough to, you know, even Britain had one when they decided to raise tuition fees. there was a student riot protesting, like, well, you can't do this to us. You know, we won't have money to go to school, education.
That happens on every university campus.
The one in Brent that happened was pretty severe. I mean, they even granted it was Princess Camilla and Prince Andrew? Not Prince Andrew. Which is the son.
William? Prince Charles. You mean Prince Charles. Yeah, Camilla Prince and Charles? Oh, okay.
Yeah, the students were attacking their car as it was rolling by. You didn't see that picture? Well,
I think you're exaggerating it. It was dramatic, certainly.
Well, it was definitely. I mean, the hand was in the car.
Yeah. It doesn't compare to anything that's going on in the Middle East, though.
No, I'm not comparing it to, but to say that I think you need a set of conditions that will allow people to get angry enough and do something. I mean, no offense, Tea Party is kind of the prime example of that. Whether or not they're right or whether they're disillusioned, they have a fervent belief that certain things aren't going the way, they get frustrated and they do what they do.
And it was the Reform Party before that, and it was the George Wallace's folks before that, and it was the Bull Moose Party long before that.
You need a reactionary party every few decades.
It seems like it, like every 10 years or so.
It's like flowers.
All right, thanks everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed this audio-only version of East Meets West. We should be back streaming live if you do like to watch us record it next Sunday. We usually record right after This Week in Tech, so we're on about 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. Until then, thanks for listening. Hope you had a good Super Bowl Sunday, whether you celebrate the Super Bowl or not.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.